Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
Fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and we have a full lineup tonight for tonight's topic, where we will be discussing travel stories. But I'm going to go around the table and introduce everyone. First up is my first co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
It's going good, Chris, and looking at the Skype lineup here, I'm excited. I think this is the most number of people I've talked to since March of last year.
Excellent.
Just in one room or just on a podcast?
Yes.
Oh, well.
Next up is my other co-host in crime, Ragnar. How's it going, Ragnar?
Well, good. Hello, everyone.
And from the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes, we have Richard Szabo. How's it going, Richard?
Pretty good. I've got some pretty cool travel stories. I've been to a lot of places.
Excellent.
All righty.
And last but not least, we have Curtis Holloway, also from the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes. How's it going, Curtis?
Fantastic. And most of my travel stories are same as Richard's, so...
Excellent. All right, well, I have a couple announcements to make right off the hop before we get going. If you went to the website, the Pop Culture Pub website, you may have noticed it is now called the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network, because we're going to have a couple of podcasts joining our little network here. First up, our Deep Space Nine discussion episodes are coming to an end, sadly. We have two episodes left. We have the last half of Season 7 that we're going to review, and then we have our wrap-up party, I guess, episode. But fear not, that is not the end of the discussion panel. I've decided to take out of mothballs the Trek 1701 podcast. So we will be rebranding ourselves as the new Trek 1701 podcast. So we're going to be talking about Enterprise. We're going to be talking about other Star Trek shows. We're going to be talking about other science fiction shows. We're going to be talking about Babylon 5. We're going to be talking about Lost. And that's all going to be on the Trek 1701 podcast, which is going to be part of the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. And last but not least, it was about a year ago, I did a couple of reunion episodes with my co-founders over at the Geek Follow podcast. This was a podcast that I did for about 6 years. and then we stopped doing the Geek Follow podcast, and I created this podcast. But we had such a good time with our reunion episodes that we said to ourselves, and this is Richard Reeder and Jeff Brown and myself, we said, you know, we should do this again. So then I threw it out to the guys. Well, why don't we just do this, like make it not a regular thing, but a semi-regular thing. So it's going to be a quarterly podcast, and it's rebranded as Geek Fallout Reloaded. So yeah, once a season, we'll be recording an episode here probably in the next month or so for spring 2021. Then we'll do one for summer, one for fall, one for winter, and we'll keep going like that. Geek Fallout used to be a weekly podcast. It was a news and discussion podcast that we did every week. We talked geek news. We would do a tech talk segment. We would do a comic book segment. And then we would do a top five. So we're kind of going to go back to that original format. But instead of weekly, we're doing it quarterly. So that is also going to be part of the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. So if you're subscribed to this feed, you will get those episodes on your feed. So I hope you enjoy them in the not-too-distant future.
I do have one question.
Yes. Absolutely, Richard. Go ahead.
Remember the very first podcast that Curtis and I did with you in your brother-in-law's backyard?
Yes, it was.
Was that a Trek 1701 or was that Geek Fallout?
It was both. It was at. We actually did two episodes that night. It was a crossover episode. Okay. So one was Geek Fallout and one was Trek 1701. So yeah. Curtis and Richard have already been on Trek 1701, and I know Kevin's been on Geek Fallout. And it's just Ragnar that's going to be introduced to these new podcasts, I guess. Well, I'm using air quotes, new podcasts.
I'm going to have to go pick myself up a pack of AGD if we're going to do that again. That's what we were drinking that night.
AGD, nice, nice. I actually like AGD. I do.
Yeah, we all sat around and had some that night. It was great.
Yep. Was it the open can AGD? I can't remember.
Yeah, with the big wide top.
Yeah.
You pop it and all, like, the whole top comes off.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I remember those. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, for tonight's episode, let's get to the main topic. And we're talking travel stories. Now, for the last, believe it or not, it's been over a year since this pandemic was declared around the world. It's been over a year since the first shutdown. We spent the Deep Space Nine discussion episodes actually came out of the pandemic because we were all bored and we wanted to talk Star Trek. So, you know, like, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I can see it. You know, vaccines are rolling out. You know, like, I guess the airlines are already booking for flights and so on and so forth. I know the Edmonton convention still hasn't been canceled yet, as far as I know. Fingers crossed. So we will be.
One is still active. Last I checked.
The which one? Sorry.
The Las Vegas convention.
Oh, is it? Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I just got an email about it recently. They just included George Takei on their lineup.
Did they move that to the fall, or is it still in summer?
Let me double check. I'm pretty sure it's still August.
Yeah, because I think, isn't the Calgary one also pushed to July or something? Or August? I can't remember.
Yeah, they moved it to July.
Okay.
Yeah, August 11 to 15.
So, yeah, fingers crossed, you know. But, you know, we are going to travel again. And I thought, you know, it'd be fun to talk about some travel stories. Some stories of where we've been and things, some of the shenanigans we may or may not have gotten into. Who wants to start? Richard and Curtis, you guys have traveled a lot together. Share with us one of your travel stories.
What do you think, Curtis? Vulcan or Vegas?
You know, it all really started for us in Vegas. Why don't we start there?
Yeah, was it 2012. Yeah, 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I had already been once to the Las Vegas convention. I had a hell of a time. It was great. I went with some other friends. and they had a room, and they just said, they're like, hey, why don't you come stay in our room and save yourself some money on your hotel that's like, you know, 3 miles away from the strip, because I got one that was just cheap.
Yep.
Anyways, so Curtis and I went to the 2012 one, and we actually had a lot of fun. We had uniforms made, and it was pretty great. We did learn that our limit of 24/7 contact is about 7 to 8 days.
Yeah.
This was almost 10 years ago, but 7 to 8 days together without really any breaks, that's pretty much our limit. That's
absolutely the maximum. Other than that, you know, the convention itself was great. It was the 25th year anniversary of TNG. And nice. It's the big one that Creation put on. It was at the Rio in Vegas. So I worked the day before all day. Tried to sleep that night, couldn't sleep at all, of course.
Yeah.
Richard was actually working a night shift at, I think you were doing operations at Paladin at that point.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it was.
So I was like, no problem, I'll sleep on the plane, because I can normally sleep on a plane, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
But I was too excited, so up all day, up all night, 5-hour flight to Vegas, Richard couldn't sleep. You know, we were just too hyped up. We had the trend, what's the word? Anyway, we had to get on a different plane when we got to Calgary.
Transfer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know why I couldn't think of that. Anyway, so we get to the Rio in Vegas, and you know, we land, we get our bags, we're dead tired, haven't slept. It's been like 36 hours, no sleep. And we're on the shuttle bus, and because the Rio is off the strip, we had to go all the way down the strip from like the stratosphere all the way to Planet Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And then they finally went to the, and we get out, and we're like, oh, God, I'm, like, dragging my suitcases, just ready to fall over. And we see the check-in line, and it's, you know, 50 people long, whatever, not that bad. So we stand in line, and we're in line for about 45 minutes, and I am ready to fall over. And we get to the desk, and our room's not ready.
Yeah, we have to wait an additional couple hours for our room.
I was like, well, there's a bar over there. Alcohol will keep me going. So we went and got some lunch. And we finally made it in. But anyway, yeah, it was my first trip as an adult. So that was super cool.
Yeah.
Rich, I talked for it a bit. I feel like I'm rambling here.
Well, that was also, was it? I think that was the year that I think we saw Vic Fontaine on stage. I think that was that year. And, okay, the pinnacle in my mind of that whole trip was the photo op with Avery Brooks. And that one was 100% that trip.
Oh, man.
Curtis and I, well, actually, you tell the story better than I do, so you can tell that short story.
So, as you would guess, it's a very long line to Avery Brooks. You know, how cool is that? We're standing in line to get our picture taken. And they bring you in, and the lineup goes along the back of the room and then extends way down the hallway, because the hallways in the Rio are just, it's like a labyrinth in there. It's gigantic. So we've been waiting in line about an hour. We finally get into the room, and we're like, oh, man, this is it. Like, in 10 minutes, we're going to be standing with Avery Brooks. This is so cool. And we're, like, inching along up the line, and just, like, my heart's pounding faster and faster the closer we get to the front. And I'm standing up at the very front, and Richard's right behind me. And he looks over, and he makes eye contact with me. And I was a younger man at the time. And he goes, hello, young man. And I just, like, wanted to squee, but I managed to contain myself. Because it's cool, man. Like, I've never that was my first time having, like, a close interaction with any Star Trek celebrity. And of all people, it's, you know, Avery Brooks.
That's awesome.
Captain Badass.
So I just, this big, stupid grin on my face, I just walk over and stood there just beaming. And Richard and him exchanged some words. I have no idea. I had my head in the clouds. And then it was over way too quickly. But, man, was it cool.
That is awesome.
I basically told him that he was like one of my like childhood heroes, and he was super awesome.
That is really cool.
And he
super friendly dude.
He seemed pretty awesome. Okay, dude, he's taller than I am, right? I'm pretty tall. I'm 6'2", but this dude is taller than I am, and he too, like Tony Todd, has these massive hands. Like,
yeah.
I didn't realize that Avery Brooks was so frickin' tall.
Yeah, he was a large man.
That's
well,
awesome.
A lot of the DS9 cast are just all tall actors. Like a lot of the main cast are all over 6 feet, so you don't quite notice how much taller he is just because of that.
That is true.
That's fair.
I want to meet him one day. Like, I know he doesn't do a lot of conventions anymore, so yeah, you guys are so lucky to have met him. You really are.
Well, later that night, we actually got to see him in concert in on the main stage in the main hall where they were doing most of the events.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird. There was probably like a packed room. There was an absolutely packed room earlier in the day for, you know, they had the TNG cast all on stage except for Patrick Stewart, who couldn't come because he was unfortunately busy carrying the torch for Queen Elizabeth for the Olympics. So I guess that passes as an excuse, you know, if anything does.
Yeah.
But weirdly, there was probably only 300 or 400 of us in there out of, like, what was it, probably 3,500 people in that room and during the day. And then only about 300 of us showed up for the concert. So, you know, we're 200 of 300 people that actually got to see him in concert. He had a pianist accompanying him.
Yeah.
And, it was a really, really cool thing. He ad-libbed, like, this whole, like, hour-long performance on stage. It was really cool.
That's awesome. In 2012, I got, like, the TNG cast came to Calgary. And that's the year I got to meet Patrick Stewart. And kind of, you know, like, Avery Brooks is definitely, like, he's definitely up there for me. But for me, you know, probably my favorite Star Trek celebrity that I've met is Patrick Stewart. And like you guys, I was so starstruck. And when I went in to finally meet him, got my picture with him, and he looked at me and said, "Well done." I was like, I was flabbergasted. I was like, you know, like, I didn't know what to say. And then the security guy asked me to leave, and it was like, okay, I guess I'm out of here. But, yeah, no, it's so awesome being able to miss those. Like, with this pandemic, I really miss the conventions. I really do. I miss seeing you guys, but I also miss the conventions, you know, seeing everybody and meeting the celebrities. All right, Kevin. Give us a travel story.
All right. Well, since you guys were talking about heading to the States, I'm going to talk about heading to Canada.
Nice.
So just want to get the exact year because my memory's a little fuzzy. 2002, I went to Toronto for WrestleMania 18.
Wow.
At the Toronto Sky Dome.
So correct me if I'm wrong, that's Rock versus Hulk?
That was Rock versus Hogan, yep.
Awesome.
Now, it was myself, one of my best friends, and his wife. It was a birthday present for him. She only put 2 tickets in the box when he unwrapped it.
Mm-hmm.
And she made him choose who he was going to take, her or me. And he chose wisely and said, "Well, I want to go with you, honey. I love you." And then she pulled out the 3rd ticket.
So nice. That's the
correct answer. So it was also awesome. 2002, though, which means this is our first traveling after 9/11 in 2001.
Yep.
So head up. Toronto's great. There it was. My recollection is there was either a pizza or a T-Hose on every corner. If not both, along the main stretches of Toronto.
Yeah.
We did the WrestleMania access thing beforehand where you can get autographs if you want to stand in line for 4 hours, take pictures with a bunch of things. You could call a match, which I actually did, and I have the VHS floating around somewhere. You're supposed to call it with one of the announcers, but they all took off early that day, so I just did it by myself.
That's all right.
Oh, yeah. I had a blast for it.
Yeah.
I remember, so there was like nearly 70,000 fans for this show. And of course, we're all standing outside waiting to go in before the show started on that Sunday. And planes were flying overhead because it's a major city.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a thing that'll happen. My friend's wife is freaking out. We're going to get bombed. We're going to get bombed. There's so many people. There's going to be a terrorist attack. And I turned to her and I said, it's Canada. No one hates them like they hate the United States. We're fine here.
Yeah.
We're probably safer here than we'd be if we stayed home.
I mean, Toronto is sort of our Chicago, but it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Well, the traffic there is probably the worst. It's terrible in Toronto.
That did take us a bit. There were times where I thought we could walk quicker than we're driving around here.
Yeah.
Positive of it.
So Sorry, Kevin, go ahead.
I was going to say, we were so high up in the Sky Dome there, I could see the gears and motors turning to open up the roof a little bit when they did pyro and fireworks for wrestlers' entrances just to get the smoke out of there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, above nosebleed. Didn't care. It was WrestleMania, could still see all of it going on. We definitely were dumb Americans. We definitely messed up the currency exchange. We absolutely got confused on kilometers and miles. getting gas totally confused us, too. I will admit we're completely dumb Americans then. I was enjoying the hell out of, and I know we've talked on the podcast before, stuff we get for streaming versus what you get in Canada for streaming.
Yep. But
I was enjoying just being at hotel, flipping through different channels. And, like, every sports channel was all WrestleMania all the time, interviewing tons of people. I'm like, this is as good as being at the Access fan show we went to. I'm seeing more here than I saw there standing in line all day.
Yeah.
Just having a blast for it. I did go into the Much Music at the time, now Fuse Studios,
okay,
and try to get a picture on the set. At the time, there was one of their big songs was from Matthew Goodband, and the video starts off. I can't remember the song exactly, but the video starts off with them running into someone's yard, stealing a garden gnome, and taking pictures of it along their tour and sending it back to the person.
Yeah.
One of our friends wanted to go, never got tickets, so I stole something from his house and took pictures of it all over Toronto and all over WrestleMania.
Nice.
To pretend like he was there.
Yeah.
So I went to Much Music, just walked in, random person, asking if I could take pictures. They gave me the dirtiest look and said no. I did get to take a picture at the receptionist desk. That was about as far as I got.
did you meet any wrestlers while you were there?
Not, because I wanted to look at everything. My friends did. They did. They got like two or three autographs, but they were in line all the time for it.
Yeah.
I was just standing watching stuff, and all of a sudden I look over, and at the time, MTV had just done a True Life I'm a Wrestler special.
Okay.
And one of the guys was a former WWF wrestler, long retired, that trains people. His name is Les Thatcher. I look over, he's standing next to me, just chilling,
yeah,
hanging out. You know, unless you were a hardcore wrestling fan, you wouldn't know anything.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's not on WWF TV. I just knew because I'm obsessed with it, and I remembered him from the special. But I just hung out with him for about a good half hour. Talked wrestling stuff, talked about him being on the show, talked about the experience being at WrestleMania. Never even thought to ask for an autograph. I was just enjoying talking to him.
Yeah.
Had a blast for it. And then, I mean, I think he enjoyed being at something like this and being talked to like a normal person, too.
Yep.
Not being hounded or anything. We did get to see that Access fan thing. They have matches all during the day and interviews and everything for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this young kid just getting a tryout in front of some fans there named Brock Lesnar.
Oh, really?
He debuted on Raw the following Monday, but previous to that, he was in their training camp at the time called Ohio Valley Wrestling in Ohio.
Yeah.
and they did not have national TV. Maybe you could find stuff online if you knew where to look. Maybe you could tape trade still at the time. But he was very much not known very well.
Yeah.
And we saw him come out and we're like, that's a big dude.
Yep.
And then you could see how he moved in his early 20s. We're like, oh, we just saw something here.
Yep.
This guy's going to be something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe like 100 people standing around the ring at the time because everyone else was in line for other things. There's Brock Lesnar.
Becoming one of the biggest wrestling names in history of wrestling. No big deal.
Yeah.
Nobody's just there like it's an indie show.
I remember...
Well, that's how they all start, right?
Yeah. I remember seeing him in Edmonton in 2003, and yeah, he really is a monster. Like, it's crazy how big that guy is. And yeah, it's fun going to those shows and stuff like that, because yeah, like I remember at that show too, my friend and I, we went to a gas station, I think to get some gas, and we're standing in line, and I wasn't really paying attention, right? I was like, do-do-do, looking around, and I realized the guy ahead of me is Rhino. From WWE, I was like, holy shit. And I'm like tapping my buddy on the shoulder. He's like, what? I'm like, look who's in front of us. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Kevin.
He's a short dude, but he's a short dude, but he's shaped like a barrel.
He is.
He's still intimidating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like if they were ever to cast a Masters of the Universe movie, he would be Ram Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome. All right, Ragnar, share with us one of your travel stories.
Well, pre-pandemic, I used to travel a lot, mostly within Canada. I built the whole business where I would drive across Canada, going from show to show to sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did comic cons and I did craft shows, and in the summer I did music festivals. So it was a real mixed bag of shows. You know, comic cons are kind of the same everywhere you go, which is really cool. But craft shows and music festivals can be very different. So there'd be weeks where I'm at a comic con, and then the next week I'm at a craft show, and then the next week I'm at a music festival. And like the way you talk to people and the things you talk about are so different at each of those shows.
Yeah.
That oftentimes it would be a little jarring. So one of the favorite places that I've ever driven to for a show, it was for a comic con, was I drove all the way up to Whitehorse in the Yukon. At this point in time, I lived in Edmonton, so mm-hmm. it was about a 24-hour drive.
Yep.
And it's a long drive, but it was not a boring drive, because pretty much from Grand Prairie and further on, it's just beautiful. There's trees and mountains and rivers and lakes and no people. And there's like parts there's parts of that drive where you go 2 to 3 hours and you don't see anything people related. Sometimes not even other cars. Like no buildings, no cars. It's just empty. So it's all the beautiful parts of the, you know, the Rocky Mountains in Alberta or the forests in BC without the tourism, without the people. Oh, it's incredible. So I'd always heard the expression, you know, people always said things like, you know, I went and visited this place and I left a piece of my soul behind.
Mm-hmm.
And the Yukon was the first time that I kind of felt that way. When I went up there, I was like, oh, I understand why people say that now. I felt that. So yeah, it was a super, super long drive, but it wasn't a dull drive. Gas was crazy expensive up there. It was $1.75 a liter. And for our American friend, there's basically 4 liters in a gallon. So it was just crazy expensive.
Mm-hmm. Almost $10 a gallon. Jesus.
Yeah, it was nasty. But, I mean, what choice do you have? Like,
so where were you when Kevin was in Toronto and needed your help?
Yeah, right? So I drove all the way up there for Comic-Con, the Yukon Comic-Con, which is held in a hotel, a tiny little hotel conference room. It's like the size of like a restaurant. And I think they had something like 350 people go. And it was still a phenomenal show. And it was absolutely worth the drive and all the expenses of the drive. And it was crazy to me that we could go to somewhere that small and do a show that tiny and still, you know, be financially viable.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, you know, it's the only thing that was happening for the entire year for anybody who was interested in anything even slightly geeky. So they all came out and they all spent money. There were people that came into the show that were not really interested in pop culture, but they just came in to check it out because there's so little else that happens there.
Yep.
And yeah, it was just phenomenal. My only complaint is because the drive took so long, like it was a three days of driving and then do the show for 3 days and then three days back home. We didn't, and I went with my friend, we didn't really have time to do anything outside of the show. I would have really liked to drive up to Dawson City and check that place out, because I've heard a lot of stories about, like, Dawson City is still a place where crazy bearded gold miners come into town and pull out little pieces of gold to pay for things, and, like, apparently it's just nuts up there. But it was another five-hour drive to get mm-hmm. to get there, and we just couldn't justify it. And that's one of the biggest complaints I have about what I was doing for work and my business model. If there was a show one weekend and then a show the next weekend, a lot of times there wasn't much time between them once you factor in all the travel time. So I'd get to go somewhere really cool like Whitehorse, but not really get to see anything,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I've always wished when I, you know, and maybe when things go back, which I unfortunately don't think is going to be this year, I think it's going to be next year. Maybe when things go back, I'll book a few less shows so that when I go somewhere really cool, I can take an extra day or two to just check the place out.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
If you ever get the chance to go up north to the Yukon, just do it. It's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I've always wanted to visit the Yukon and maybe even the Northwest Territories. I've been to Alaska. That's as close as I've come, but that was on a cruise. It was a lot. It was great. It was like, I love cruises. That's the only cruise I've ever been on. But man, we had such a good time. It was, and such cool things to see. And, so yeah, that was 2016, but, that's as far north as I've gone, besides going to Fairview, Alberta, because my wife has family up there. So we used to go up there every summer when her grandparents lived there.
Cool.
But, you know, because of COVID, well, they actually moved to St. Albert prior to COVID, and then COVID hit, so we actually see them less, even though they're only an hour away. You know, just crappy timing. All right, well, the first thing on my list that I wanted to talk about was the first time I ever went anywhere. I was 14 years old, and my parents took us, National Lampoon's Vacation style, on a road trip through the States down to, well, first we were in, we hit Idaho, like, no, first we hit Salt Lake City. And the most exciting thing about there was a car accident outside our hotel. So that was pretty exciting. Then we were in Idaho, or maybe we were in Idaho before Salt Lake. I can't remember, where we met some family. Then we went down to Vegas, And that's the first time I was in Vegas, and they had just built the Luxor, so I was just flabbergasted that there's this like glass pyramid in the desert. It was so awesome. And I believe they used to have Segaland in there. And I remember just 14-year-old kid just being in awe of this Segaland. It was so awesome. We spent a couple days in Vegas. Then we drove to Disneyland, to Anaheim. And we went to Disneyland. We went to Universal Studios. And then we spent a day, we did a bus tour down to Tijuana. So we went to Mexico. We drove back up through California, in the western states. And then we ended our holiday in Banff. It was great. It was a lot of fun. Some of the memorable highlights were, I can't remember if it was Disneyland or Universal Studios. We were in line for a ride. And keep in mind, I'm a 14-year-old boy. And very steep staircase. And we're in line. And there's this guy and his girlfriend or wife, I'm not sure which, and she's very, 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 very beautiful. And she was wearing a very, 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 very short skirt. And the staircase was steep. And anyway, I got distracted. I was busy staring at, something down below. The line had moved ahead. And so I look forward and I look up. And this very, very, very attractive woman was very, 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 very much not wearing underwear. And being a 14-year-old boy, I my jaw dropped. My eyes probably came out of my head. I couldn't move. I was frozen. And I think my dad saw it too, and he just kind of nudged me, and he kind of gave me a little smile and said, we gotta move up. So I think he saw it too. So that was one of the things that I remember most. Another thing was when we were at Universal Studios, we were taking the tour, and Weird Al Yankovic was on our tour.
Oh, sweet.
Like, not as a performer or anything. He was just with his girlfriend, who was also very, 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 very good looking. My sister actually got her picture taken with him. I was too shy. I was just, like, starstruck. But my sister, had enough guts to actually go up and say hi to him and ask for his autograph, and she got her picture taken with him.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was the first celebrity I think I ever, like, big celebrity I'd ever met in my life. Going to Mexico was quite neat. Humbling for a kid, seeing all these, because we're in Tijuana, seeing all these street kids, trying to sell gum and stuff to make some money. That it was a 2-week trip. A lot of in the vehicle. I received a lot of bruises on my arm from my sister punching me and pinching me, because we got on each other's nerves quite often. And
as you should, though. That's your
joke. Yeah.
It'd be weird if you didn't, honestly.
Yeah. And yeah, it was like I said, it was like National Lampoon's. It was a lot of fun. But all right, well, let's go around the table again. And Richard, do you have another story for us, sir?
Well, it really depends on what you want to hear, because I could tell you about the other Las Vegas convention I went to, or I could tell you about one of the Europe trips that I was on. You
can tell both. Absolutely.
Well, I won't go. I won't take two stories in a row. Maybe on the next turnaround.
Sure. Yep.
So when I was 17, almost 17, my mom asked me. She says, "You want to go to Hungary?" And I was like, "Oh, hell yeah!" Because I've always been interested in the culture of where my family comes from and things like that. And My brother and sister, one older, one younger, had no interest in such things. They didn't care about traveling. They were busy, you know, being derelicts, as it were, you know, drugs mm-hmm. and not going to school and whatnot. So at the time, I was working at Sport Check. So all my money, you know, I gave it to my mom, and she bought all the tickets and all that fun stuff. And we flew from here to Toronto, so Edmonton, Alberta, to Toronto, Ontario. And I tell you, like, that's one of the nicest things at night. It's all lit up. You can see all the whole town. It looks great mm-hmm. from, you know, 10,000 feet up. And then from Toronto, we flew to the Budapest airport, Ferihegy. And from there, our family met us there, which was super cool. So we didn't have to worry about catching a taxi or anything like that. And I was shocked. In Canadian, like Western, you know, North American culture, it's a lot different. So when you greet somebody, at least in like family or close friends in a lot of parts of Europe, you kiss them on the cheek.
Mm-hmm.
So like I had an uncle that was like 65 and he's like, kissed me on the cheek, and I was like, this is kind of weird, but I get it. It's culture.
Yep.
And then from there, we went all the way to a tiny, tiny village, probably like 100 people, maybe. That's where a portion of my family lived, and that's where we were staying, in a village called Rabapordine. And it was just outside of a small town called Chorna. And Chorna, and a couple hours away, is a place called Chopron, and that's where most of my family is. So Chorna, great place, real like rustic kind of great ice cream. And we went to a place called Balaton Lake. Balaton Lake is kind of like a tourist attraction a little bit, and you can go for like boat rides. And I was on this like massive yacht. The wind is blowing and it was super cool. I got some pictures somewhere. I don't know where they are though. And we took some trips. We went, we drove to Austria, to a town called Neufelder See. And that's where my mom and her brother and sister grew up for several years as children in school in Austria. And that was super cool to see. And we went to a country called Slovakia. And a lot of these countries that are bordering Hungary used to be part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So most of them have sections of country where they still speak Hungarian. So we have had family friends in Slovakia, and they put on this huge meal for us. It was like a banquet, and I was, like I said, 16, almost 17, and one of my cousins is like, here's a shot of Palinka. And Palinka is like Hungary's vodka. It's made from, you know, mostly pears. There's other variations of it. And that's where I learned that I like Palinka, and let me tell you, it's one of the best, like, best drinks I've ever had in my life. Just the other day, I was in Jasper, and my friend's dad gave us a shot of something else that was similar to Palinka. I can't remember the name, but it's a type of brandy, and you just take a full shot after your meal, and that's all you really need.
Mm-hmm.
But in Slovakia, we saw this huge outdoor concert called Dario. And it was fantastic. It was like Hungarian pop stars, and like, unfortunately, the biggest pop star, the pop king of Hungary, his name is Zombo Jimmy. He died in 2001. He was super drunk, and he was messing around with one of his handguns because he was a very avid hunter. And nobody really knows, but either he forgot there was still one round in the chamber, or he just wanted to die, and he shot himself in the head.
Hmm.
Who knows? Nobody really knows. Either way, he died, and that was unfortunate. But one of the things I remember the most about that outdoor concert was their outdoor porta-potties were the best I'd ever been in my life. I would not have known that it was a porta-potty unless you look on the outside. It was like, oh, look, it's a porta-potty. And they had this huge, like, roundabout sink thing. You wash your hands afterwards. And let me tell you, everything that we ate was amazing because, you know, you're in another country and their cuisine is totally different. So I got to eat some of the best Hungarian food. And, yeah, just probably one of the best experiences of my young life is just going to Hungary and just enjoying. That was the first time Ragnar was talking about, like, when you go somewhere you just, like, leave a part of your soul behind. That was the first time that happened to me. And it didn't happen again for a very long time, but that's, like, one of the few places in the world that really feels like home is Hungary.
Excellent. That's awesome. What year would that have been, approximately? Like, after 9/11?
Yeah, actually, there's a small story about that. 2001, September 11th, my mom was scheduled to go to Hungary the year before I went, and that was the day that the 9/11 attacks happened. So her flight was actually delayed by 10 days because of that whole situation.
Oh, wow.
I remember waking up in the morning, and I walked down the hall to my grandparents' apartment because they lived in our building. And my opa was like, "Did you see the news today?" And I was like, "Oh, I just got up. It was like, I don't know, 9 or 10. And he's showing me the news. And like, it's like, and then like the first thing I did was like call my mom. And I was like, "Hey, well, what's up?" She's like, "Oh, our planes got delayed. So I got to come back home for however long." And then the very next year is when I went. It was the year after that.
Oh, okay. All right. Curtis, do you have another travel story to share with us?
I do. Since we're on a bit of a Europe tangent here, I'll keep it in the same ballpark.
Okay.
When I was 9 years old, in fourth grade, this would have been 1995, if memory serves. Late 94, or whatever, somewhere in there.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm old enough that all the pictures are, in an album somewhere, and they're not digitized anywhere. So it was a while ago.
Yep.
So I grew up with a stepmother who was pretty cool. She was Dutch, and her whole family was Dutch. She had been born in the Netherlands and came here when she was just young. And so I grew up with her pretty young. You know, I think I was 3 or 4 when her and my dad started hanging out. So I sort of knew her my whole life and her parents, my opa and oma. And when I was 9, her side of the family offered me the chance to go on a trip to the Netherlands with them. So, nice. Of course, I went because, you know, probably was never going to have that opportunity again. And it is the only time I've been to Europe thus far. So we went. It was just myself, opa and oma, and my uncle, who was their son. And I had met some of these folks before because, you know, they come over and visit the family. Then the family that's here goes over there and visits. They're very much, very back and forth, that family. A lot of visiting. So it was a little strange. I was in a country where I didn't understand anybody, and they didn't understand me, except for the little group I was with. And the only thing that I could ever order was cola, because they understood what that was. So I had a lot of sugar on that trip and ate a lot of hamburgers because I didn't really trust the local cuisine. I was a fussy kid, bit of a fussy eater.
Yeah.
But that was interesting. I got to hang out. We stayed in a town called Leeuwarden, which isn't Amsterdam. We landed in Amsterdam and got a ride to this other town. I remember it was cool. Downtown, they had this building that it was like a full building, not a skyscraper, but, you know, probably 20 floors or whatever. And when they had started building this thing back in the 60s or 70s, something in the foundation shifted. And it's like a little bit of a lean on the building that you can visibly see from a distance. It's not the Tower of Pisa or anything, but it's like this leaning building in the middle of downtown. So I thought that was pretty cool. But the real highlight was after 2 weeks in Leeuwarden, with, you know, catching up with family and all the visiting and all that good stuff, we went down to the Canary Islands for a week. And it's this little cluster of islands just off the west coast of Africa. And it's mostly Spanish. They speak Spanish there. There's all sorts. We stayed on a little island called Gran Canaria, sort of a circular-shaped island that was formed by a volcano, and it's been dormant for, you know, long enough that there's, you know, there's trees and like a whole ecosystem has evolved ever since. And there's this one section of the whole of the island that's just sand dunes, as far as you can see, just pure white sand. I'd never seen anything like it. The other thing I had never seen anything like was the fact that there was no real law requiring anyone to wear any clothing above the waist. So at 9 years old, I just about broke my neck walking down the beach. Should, you know, just back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. I didn't know where to look. Like, you know, I knew I wasn't supposed to see that because I'm nine, but at the same time, I was so very curious. Not quite old enough to where, you know, I could sit and drool over it, but I had no idea what the heck was going on. I'd never seen anything like it. So I was a very, very confused little boy for that entire week. Not a lot to say about it, but other than that, and it was, you know, a while ago, I don't remember a whole lot of the trip, but that was certainly a real highlight for me at that point in my life, going over and experiencing, like Richard was saying, you know, the whole kiss on each cheek when you greet someone. That blew me away. I had no idea what the heck was going on. And yeah, just the experience of being a total fish out of water, not really being able to communicate with anyone outside of my group was a very strange feeling.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I want to jump in and share my story. Sure. We'll continue with the Europe thing. I went to Germany in 2001. So what happened was, after I moved out of my house, you know, and got my own place, my mom, decided to get an exchange student. So the first to take up that room, right, that I used to occupy. And the first, exchange student she got was a girl named Kristen from Germany. And she became very close to our family. She's like another sister, to me and to my sister. So when she went back to Germany, I told her I'd come visit her the next year. So that was, this would have been April 2001. So it was before 9/11. And yeah, area of Germany where she lives, it's a little town called Windischleibe, and it's in East Germany. So for people who don't know, like when Germany was split in two, when there was West Germany and East Germany was controlled by the Soviets. West Germany was controlled by the United States. And East Germany, the second language that Kristen's parents were taught was Russian, not English. So a lot of people, like in her town in particular, you know, like Kristen and her friends could speak English, but no one else could. So I couldn't talk to her mom and dad. Like, you know, I had to get Kristen to translate, or Kristen's brother. He also spoke English because he's younger than Kristen. So they're taught English now. So there were times like because Kristen, she was out of school and she worked at a restaurant. So there was times when she wasn't there. She wasn't, because she still lived at home. So I was staying with them. Where I had, you know, and Kristen's brother might have been off doing something else, and I was alone with her parents, and I couldn't really talk to them. But we made it through. But one of the things I noticed at the time, because, you know, this is pre-smartphones, this is pre a lot of things, in that part of Germany, there's really no English on TV. So, you know, a lot of shows and stuff that we watched, I couldn't understand what they were saying. There was the odd movie that they had German subtitles, so they didn't dub it, so I got to hear it, but that was very, very few and far between. One thing I noticed with German dubbing, they do a very good job. Like when you're watching, like when I was over there, they're watching Armageddon, the Ben Affleck, Bruce Willis movie, and it was dubbed in German, and Gladiator, the Russell Crowe Roman one. And they did such a good job. Like you couldn't even tell, like the way Russell Crowe's like lips moved, it sounded like he was speaking German. Like they did a really good job dubbing. And the people that they get to do the dubbing sound like that actor. Because I know there was one of the actors in Gladiator is actually German, so I think he actually did his own dubbing. But it's amazing. It's not like here, like when we watch those old samurai movies when they dub, you know, the English and the lips don't match and it's like really awkward to watch. It's not like that at all over there. I found that really amazing. But some of the highlights from there, there's this old tower that they built during the era of Napoleon Bonaparte. They built this tower basically to see far and basically repel his attacks. And it was really cool. It's like this old castle slash tower. And to get to the top of it is this one singular small spiral staircase that seemed like you go up this thing. Like, we had to take breaks, and you can only go single file. And, you know, so we'd have to stop every once in a while to catch our breath and then continue on. But the reason why it was built that way is so that armies couldn't get in it. So, like, if anyone if any armies tried getting to the top of this thing, they would just kill them because they'd have to go single file, right? So that was really cool. So, you know, like, and seeing the architecture, seeing all these old castles and buildings. I went to a number of different castles. I went to a castle in Leipzig? And the big organ, like the big piano in this church in this castle, Johann Sebastian Bach played there. You know, and it's cool to think, wow, like, this, you know, this is where, you know, history was.
Just an absolute musical icon.
Yeah.
Smokes.
Yeah, it was cool. Going to Berlin, like, you know, we learn about World War II from books and from our veterans, you know, from our family members and so on. But Germany, there's still places in Berlin that there's still buildings that were destroyed during the war that haven't been rebuilt, or at least they hadn't been by 2001. So it was neat to see these built, like, because when I went there, they were excavating this church that had been bombed during the war. And it, just to think, like, it sat there for decades and decades, you know, untouched. Because when Germany was controlled by the United States and the Soviet Union, they put no money into rebuilding, like, because they didn't care. So it was amazing to see the effects of that war, this war that I'd read about, that I was taught about in school, and to actually see it was amazing. And I actually saw, you know, when I was in one of those, I can't remember what it's called, but it's in Berlin. It's the square where Hitler had one of his marches and one of his book burnings. And, you know, like, to that history, you know, to be like, oh my God, you know, like, if I had been standing there during World War II, like, I would have been arrested, you know, like, I wouldn't have been, you know, allowed there. And to be there, it was amazing. And we went to, I can't remember what, Dresden. We went to Dresden. And at Dresden, they have a German war museum, and it's amazing, like, to go through that museum and to see all the different, you know, for me, the interesting part was World War II, you know, because that's the most I know about in terms of history. And it's crazy, like, just how big, you know, the Nazi Party was during that time. Because, like, when you watch movies, like, say, Indiana Jones, for example, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, when the Nazis were in Egypt, you know, they wore, you know, a different uniform than the Nazis did in The Last Crusade. And I didn't, you know, I never really understood, like, you know, why are they wearing different uniforms? They did have different uniforms. They had uniforms for Africa. They had uniforms for South America. They had uniforms for Europe. They had different uniforms for Asia. And the, I think the most shocking thing that I saw was I'd always heard about the Hitler Youth and, you know, that they had these, you know, basically kids that were being taught to be soldiers. And at the end of the war, when the Allies were basically coming in, these kids were basically sent out to defend, you know, their leader. And in the museum, there's this one little uniform, and it and they have a picture of the kid that it was actually on. And it was a six-year-old kid. And, you know, this little Nazi officer uniform, you know, with the boots and the hat and the gun. And, I, you know, it just blows my mind, you know. Like, I could not imagine a six-year-old kid, you know, as a soldier. But that happened. You know, it was very, very eye-opening for me. And you know, and aside from the war stuff, you know, Germany was a beautiful place. You know, like I said, I went in April. Like, when I left Canada, like, when I left Edmonton, like, everything was still brown. There's still snow on the ground. You go there, and everything's green. The only thing is the trees hadn't leaved yet. But people were already starting to plant flowers and stuff, and it was so beautiful. And I got to meet, you know, a lot of nice people. And Kristen's dad, like, he was the one that actually took me to the War Museum. And, you know, because he knew that I was kind of interested in history and so on and so forth. He did offer to take me to one of the concentration camps. But I said no. I didn't want to go there. You know, like, he didn't want to go there either. But he said if I really wanted to see it, he would take me. And I told him no. You know, I appreciate it, but I can't go there. And I think he was relieved because, you know, he was, you know, quite ashamed of that. But, you know, I digress. You know, great family, great food. Like, the, you know, everything's fresh there. You know, nothing's frozen. If you like stinky cheese, you know, it's, you know, you open their fridge and that's all you smell. And the barbecuing was amazing. Oh, and the beer. Oh my God. Like, every town has at least one brewery. And when I say town, like Windischleib, it's smaller than Barrhead. But the next town is only like maybe 5 kilometers away and you're in another town. And then maybe from that town, there's another town, like maybe 5 or 10 kilometers away. And then you're in another town and each one has a brewery and the beer is cheap and so good. Like the beer bottles are so big. You drink one beer and I was buzzed. Like, I was like, whoa, like this, you know, and it was so good. It was so good. And I think, when I was leaving, when I, cause we, I flew out from Leipzig to Berlin, I think, and from Berlin to Toronto, I think, there's this soap opera that Kristen and her family watch every night. It's kind of like Coronation Street, but it's a German version. And there was this one storyline with this, I don't know, late teenager girl, and she got into some trouble or whatever. I actually saw that actress at the airport in Berlin. Cause like I had, like I said, I couldn't understand anything they were saying. I was just watching. I just knew that she's really pretty. And then when I told Kristen, when I got home, she was, you know, oh my God, that's so awesome. You know, cause apparently she's a celebrity there. But anyway, I digress. Kevin, can you give us another travel story, sir? Sorry. Real quick before I move on, I just want to add to Curtis's when he was talking about some of the nudity and stuff there. I didn't, you know, like I said, it was April. There was no, but there were topless beaches nearby. But with it being a little bit colder, no one was there. But one thing, like I will say about North America is we are very prudish. Like, we are kind of prudes. In Germany, they have a version of the Edmonton Sun, and they have a Sunshine Girl, and their Sunshine Girls are topless in their newspaper. You buy a Maxim magazine. I don't even know if they make Maxim anywhere, but the girls are topless. they weren't doing the cheek kissing. But one thing I noticed, like in Kristen's house in particular, because that's where I stayed, is all the doors have glass windows, like even the bathroom. So like if you're not careful and you walk up to, you know, go into the bathroom and somebody's already in there, you might see something that you weren't expecting. But they don't really care, you know, like there it's not a big deal. I know, like,
countries like that too.
Well, I like
very open, very like nudity orientated.
Oh yeah. Well, and the thing with Germany is a lot of people have saunas in their house. And it's not unusual for families to go into the sauna without any clothes. That really, I don't know. I could not imagine seeing my mom or my dad naked, there's no way I could do that. But there, it's normal. But anywho, sorry, Kevin. Please go ahead. Do you have another travel story to share?
You're fine. I do not have any travels to Europe to speak of.
That's okay.
Canada's the only other country I've ever gone to. I don't know if I have any topless stories that would be safe to tell or not. So previous to my wife, pretty much another lifetime ago, I was dating a girl. I still lived in New York, and she lived in California.
Okay.
And through an odd turn of events, we met and started dating and all. And while with her, I didn't really think of it. I just thought, oh, she wants to see me. You know, we'll schedule a time that I can take off of work and go out there and everything. Looking back, though, and being more mature and having to have paid for more things myself, I'm like, her family had money. They flew me out to California anytime I wanted.
Nice.
Or we drove. Yeah, not cheap. So we did one as a road trip from New York all the way to California. I stayed a few months out there and then all the way back again. I think the biggest thing I learned during this trip, one, I learned just how big United States is. And I think you guys, also living in a country that spans the continent, you mm-hmm. really get a, you know, good idea. Two, I thought I was open-minded, but really traveling to some of the different states, it may as well be traveling to a different country.
Mm-hmm.
And I also realized that spending a week in a car one way and then another week on the way back with someone that you're probably not going to be dating that much longer is not fun.
Yeah.
Like, I knew there was an expiration date in that relationship. But I would say, you know, the girl didn't work out, nor did I really want it to, looking back. I'm very happy with where I ended up. But I think I was meant to do that because within the span of that summer, I was at the Atlantic Ocean, Mississippi River, Great Salt Lake, the Great Lakes, the Pacific Ocean, like just all across, discovering mm-hmm. everything along the way. Fascinating. Like, I don't know when I'll ever do a trip like that again. Wish the company was better, but that's besides the point.
Mm-hmm.
But I also realize, and I do try to be more aware of it, talking with you guys, talking with other people. When out in California and meeting her family and her friends and everything, I had certain people not like me there because of my, quote, stereotypical New Yorker attitude.
Hmm.
Clearly, they're saying, I act like I'm from the city.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm at least 7-hour drive away from the city. I'm closer to Canada than I am to any U.S. city. When I say upstate, I don't mean the next county over. I mean upstate.
Yeah.
And no clue. Just no typical New Yorker attitude. I was confrontational and rude and selfish and stuff I didn't even have a concept I was doing. But I thought, here I am still in the same country, and I'm having this. Of course we look like the ugly Americans actually going to another country. Here I am speaking the same language, having a lot of the same cultural touchstones, raised, you know, experiencing a lot of the same things, and I'm still the ignorant American here, even though we're all Americans.
Yeah.
Incredibly eye-opening experience for me. I will say there was a lot of stuff that I appreciated, enjoyed. I got to go camping in Redwood National Park.
Nice.
Unreal. Just, you know, you just lay on your back and look up and think, I can't believe these exist. I can't believe something like this grew and existed, and there's so many of them. Scariest drive I've ever had, winding your way up to it. I got to realize how big California is. When I said, oh, cool, could we go to, like, L.A. or San Diego on this trip? No, that's an 8-hour drive. I didn't even think of it. You know, minimum 8-hour drive. I'm thinking we can just pop over, because we did do San Francisco. I got lost in the Castro District. If you know what it is, you know why that would be a little intimidating for a moment.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, just going through everything. We didn't do Vegas, as was brought up earlier here, but we cut through Reno. And I'm just looking around thinking, you just want to be Vegas so bad, don't you? That's all you're trying to do here.
I always think of Reno as being like an old person's place. Because my
it really was.
Okay, because my great aunt, who was like, at the time, I guess, in her 70s, her and her group of girls used to go to Reno, like, every year. So that's why I always associate it with being an old people place.
Yeah. Well, and then you just see things. Like, Nebraska, I saw cows, and that was about it. I'm just thinking, you know, there's whole parts of the country that it really seems like they don't exist. Because it is just land. Parts of Nevada, Utah is going across like a more desert area. It's just stunning that's, you know, me coming from shadow of the Adirondacks pretty much, and, you know, all of the trees, and just to see the expansive desert for hours after hours of driving. But the thing that really got me is how shady and deceptive billboards can be. Because there was one theme park, 100 miles. Oh my gosh, that looks fantastic. That might be a good spot to stop for a night. Maybe get a hotel there, you know, go around and stuff and all. And about every 10 miles, bigger billboards, whole families there. It looks exciting. We're like, okay, this is what we're doing. We're all excited for it. Pull up. It is some sort of Christian theme park thing. So you have to be involved with whatever branch of Christianity that they were part of to be a part of this or convert or whatever.
Yeah.
A bit of a bait and switch. In Salt Lake City, there was signs for miles, the Great Salt Air. Come visit the Great Salt Air. It looks like a Taj Mahal on the lake. Just gorgeous looking building and all the billboards. I was like, oh, we're definitely stopping here. This looks awesome. We'll get some nice pictures and everything.
Yeah.
No. It was burnt down, rebuilt, and is now occasionally a spot, but for the most part, it sits there empty and vacant, except for one poor employee that's running a gift shop in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was like my geography of my own country being terrible. The lake was so low at that point as well, and I'm not sure why. I don't know if it was a bad season or dams or a drought or whatever, I don't know, but just dead fish covering where this place is, and it just smells like salt and dead fish everywhere. Yeah.
Yikes.
We just turned around. I'm like, well, I got a nice picture of me at the lake. Great Salt Lake. Let's keep going. But we are a deceptive country for traveling. For many reasons. But for traveling as well.
Excellent. All right, Ragnar, do you have another travel story to share?
Well, yeah. So I did get to go to France when I was 15 years old, which I think was about 1999.
Nice.
I don't really remember. Yeah, it was a school trip. I don't really remember much about it. I remember that the bread was really good. Some of the other food to a teenager who grew up in a kind of British household with everything was overcooked and there, you know, wasn't a lot of seasoning. The food was a little weird for the most part, and I didn't eat a lot of it just because it was weird. Nowadays, I'm like, oh my God, like I'd eat all of that stuff.
But
at that age, it was kind of like, man, I don't want that. And I remember going to Juneau Beach where the Canadian forces landed on D-Day. And it was pretty cool. It was pretty, you know, you're in that German bunker looking down on the beach and you're seeing like, yeah, I can see why they took so many casualties. Like, this is pretty intense. And I know you're not supposed to, and they even had signs saying you're not supposed to, but I definitely chipped a piece out of the wall and took it home. Because I was just like, I can't not do this.
Yep.
So yeah, but I don't remember a lot of France. I do remember that even the commercials on television in France had nudity. Like, there's a shampoo commercial and you could see the woman showering and you could see her boobs. And at, you know, the age of 15, that was like, this is awesome.
Excellent.
And you could buy beer in a vending machine.
Yep.
So it was like, you know, you can get a can of, you know, Coke or a bottle of water or juice or beer. Oh, well, I'll have the beer.
Yeah.
And then you had mentioned earlier back that you got to go on a cruise.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually been fortunate enough. I've been on a cruise. I went on the 70,000 tons of metal cruise.
Man, that would have been sick.
Yeah, it was. So they take a cruise ship and they turn it into a floating heavy metal festival for 4 days. And so I've been more than once. The first time I went was definitely the best time. And part of that is the lineup that year had more bands that I liked. And part of it is just the first time you go, because it's the first time, everything is just so different and unique and exciting. And when you go multiple times, you're kind of like, yeah, okay, we did this already. You know, yeah, I've seen this. Yeah, okay. So the first year I went, the boat went from Miami to the Cayman Islands and back. And while I was in the Cayman Islands, I got to go swim with stingrays. And got to actually, like, pick them up and touch them and stuff.
Cool.
And they're basically like cats. I mean, they don't look like cats, and they're a lot bigger. And, of course, if they sting you, you can die. But they're basically like cats. When you're standing in the reef, they come up, and they brush up against you just like a cat would do.
Huh.
And then they'll let you touch them and pet them. And these are wild stingrays. These aren't, you know, trained ones, and these aren't, like, you're not in a zoo. You're in the ocean.
Yeah.
Now, they know that they're going to get fed. So part of it is for sure, you know, they come up to us because they know we're going to give them fish at some point.
Yep.
But it was really neat. And to this day, it's one of those things where I'm like, I look back on my life, I'm like, I can't believe that actually happened.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. And really, that whole cruise is one of those things you look back on it, especially now in a pandemic where, you know, not allowed to get close to anyone, and it's so surreal. Like, it happened in January in the Caribbean on a boat listening to heavy metal bands from all around the world, smushed in together with heavy metal fans from all around the world, Like, it sounds so made up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's having been on that cruise, I don't know how much I would enjoy a normal cruise, because I suspect I'd be bored. Because on that cruise, it was like, there's three stages, there's always two bands playing. They start playing at 10 in the morning and they stop playing at like 3 at night. There's all, you know, there's autograph sessions and, you know, there's girls everywhere. And yeah, it was crazy. And during this pandemic, I look back at moments of my life like that, and you try to remember that, like, eventually it won't be so shitty. Eventually we'll get to do stuff like that again, but it all just seems so far away right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add, like, when you were talking about Juno Beach, it was a couple years ago. I'm sitting at home watching CTV National News, and they're doing like the 75th anniversary. Like, they had a bunch of school kids go back to Juno Beach with some veterans and so on and so forth. So anyway, I'm sitting there watching the news, and one of the waitresses from one of the restaurants here in Barhead's on there. I'm like, what? I'm like, I took a picture with my phone. I'm like, I don't know, Crystal was in the other room or something. I'm like, doesn't this look like that girl from the Spring Sun restaurant? She's like, yeah, it does. So I threw it out on Facebook on the Barhead Aware site, and they're like, oh yeah, she's there with, because I think she was in grade 12 or something. And yeah, they did a trip to Juno Beach with, through the Legion, I think. But yeah, it's just a small world. I'm just like watching the news, and I was like, wait a minute. And the restaurant's literally like two blocks away from here, and that's where she worked.
That's so cool.
So anyway, let's go around the table one more time, and we can share any travel stories we have. But I have a question for you as well. Where do you want to go in the future where you have never been? So what destination do you want to go to at some point in your life? So let's start off with Richard. Give us another travel story, my friend.
Well, let's see. Probably one of my favorite ones is in 2015, I got to go to Europe again. And Europe's one of my favorite places.
Mm-hmm.
Just the people there, the cultures, pretty great to see. And at the time, my girlfriend, she was, I guess she was part of, her younger sister was in her grade 11 or 12 year, and in their school, they got to do a big trip, and the family gets to join and be like chaperones and, like, you know, volunteer type things, but they got to pay their own way, of course. So her family did that trip, and they invited me to join them at the end of the school trip, because as a family, they were going to continue on and go through more of Europe. And I said, well, hell yeah, that sounds awesome. So I put all the money I had and, you know, bought plane tickets, and, you know, I gave them extra money because they were like, well, B&Bs are the way to go because, you know, hotels are so damn expensive, right?
Yep.
So from here, I flew to Reykjavik. And Reykjavik, I didn't get to, it's in Iceland. I wish I could have gone to do some kind of exploring, but the transfer time was only a couple hours. So I got to see Reykjavik from the airport, and it was amazing just to see it. And then I flew from there to Paris, and from Paris I met up with her and her family, and we got to spend the entire day in Paris. I got to see the Eiffel Tower. And we went to the top of the Eiffel Tower. That was crazy cool. You know, you think to yourself, like, damn, I'm literally on top of the Eiffel Tower. That's not something that, you know, people normally think about. And then we had great food. Paris has amazing food. And people say, like, oh, you know, Paris, it smells funny and all this fun stuff. And I'm like, I didn't notice that once at all. I had no problems with any of that. And when I first got there, the taxi driver dude was like awesome. And he was just, I don't know, to me, he's like a really good driver.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this thing called the Arc de Triomphe. It's this massive, massive fucking traffic circle. It's like 3 or 4 lanes wide, and you know, it's nonstop all the time. Go, 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 go. And I'm like, wow, we're gonna die here for sure. Like, our traffic circles are like 1 or 2 lanes, you know, yeah, minor. And he just goes straight in, weaving through traffic, no problems, and out the other side. And I was like, that was fucking cool. I mean, I'm a driver. Like, there's two kinds of people I find. There's the grocery getters, mm-hmm, and then there's the people who love to drive, and I love to drive. And that was just cool to see. And then from there, we took the Under Ocean train all the way to London. And in London, we went all around London town. We had a really nice, like, apartment that we were staying in. And we were walking to the Thames just to go out and about. And in one of the back alleys, I swear to God, there was a couple literally having sex, you know, just off to the side. I was like, well, that's interesting. And we went on something called the London Eye. The London Eye is this massive, massive, like, Ferris wheel with, like, capsules.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see around the entire city of London. You can see Big Ben. Well, Big Ben's the clock tower, the bell, and the building itself was, like, Queen Victoria building or something. But anyways, we saw some really cool stuff. There was this dude dressed as Shrek walking around. And we went into this, like, the undergrounds of London. And it's just this whole, like, it's almost like a museum trip, but it's underground, and you get to see, you know, an old street that used to be there, and you got to see all the cool, like, historical things. And then at the end, there was just, like, kind of like a ride thing, but I was like, I'm a fat guy, so I couldn't go on the ride. That just, like, didn't work for me. Then from there, we did one of the Necrobus tours. Sorry, we went from there, from London to Edinburgh in Scotland.
Nice.
And in Scotland and Edinburgh, we did the Necrobus tour. So we got to see all, like, the cool, like, supernatural things. And then we got to ride around in this, like, black, old-style double-decker bus where the bottom of the bus was made up to look like funeral rites type stuff. And the top, we got to drive around, go through graveyards, and we got to see all the cool, like, supernatural stories. And we drove out, and we went to the castle where Harry Potter was filmed or, like, based on.
Okay.
And you can't really tell because most of the TV show, or the movie, sorry, is, like, CGI. But we got to go there, and we got to see, like, an actual castle, and that was super sick. And, man, just even the regular bars in Edinburgh, mm-hmm, serve amazing food because they're, like, right on the water. So I had fresh fish and chips. I had haggis for the first time, and that was awesome.
Hmm.
And because I was there with my girlfriend, even though her family was there, I got to enjoy every place that we went more than some people do, if you know what I mean. So that was a good time. That was a really good time. I miss it. I think I need to do another Europe trip at, mm-hmm, some point, because there's so many places I haven't seen,
yep,
and I want to see it all, man.
I hear you. So where would you want to go, Richard, that you haven't been before?
Oh, you know what? I'm torn, because I've been to Europe, I've been to the States. I'd either want to go to someplace in Asia, or multiple places in Asia, but I'd also like to go to New Zealand and Australia as well. And then just to say I did it, I want to go to Antarctica, but that's not super possible.
Oh, it's possible. There's a cruise that goes down to Antarctica.
Can you get off and, like, actually go, yep, on to Antarctica?
Yep.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Probably expensive, but at least it's, you know,
yep,
attainable in some, yep, way, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely on my bucket list for sure. All right. Curtis, do you have another travel story, and where do you want to go in the future?
I do. I was a little torn. We've talked about lots of our Vulcan experiences on the podcast before,
yep,
so I'm not going to talk about Vulcan. Where a lot of people don't go, but plenty of people have heard of, is Fort McMurray, Alberta. Now, this isn't a leisure travel sort of destination, but I have been there. I've flown there and I've driven there. So I might as well talk a little bit about it because not everybody's been. So I'm a structural iron worker by trade. So when I go up there, it's always for work. Here in Alberta, as anyone from Alberta will tell you, the oil patch is the big economic engine of Alberta, and Fort McMurray is the closest town to where all the natural resources located and actually extracted and processed. And it's thousands upon thousands of square kilometers up there do go towards bringing that resource out of the ground and sort of driving our economy with it. But when you get these celebrities that go up there in their private jets, no less, to cry about how awful and bad it is, let me tell you, to fly up to Fort Mac, you would never know that it's the same place these people are talking about. A few years ago, they had a really devastating fire that tore through the town, and it was all over the news, all over the place. I'm sure they were running that story everywhere that spoke English. It was just gigantic.
Yep.
So even considering the devastation caused by the fire, which, you know, it wasn't just the town, obviously, that burned. It was all sorts of wilderness area. So between that and the tar sands is what they call it to try and spin it to sound awful. Yep. You would think that it was just some sort of sludge-covered wasteland, and that couldn't be further from the truth. The last time I worked there was 2018, and we flew up, and it's about a 45-minute flight north of Edmonton. And I'll tell you, it's green as far as you can see, all the way to the horizon in every direction. And where we landed was the Firebag Airstrip, which is, I think it's about an hour and a half out of Fort McMurray. I could be way out to lunch here, but it's north of town anyway. And even there, all flying across Fort Mac, approaching Fort Mac, all the way around, all you can see is green. It's like the fire never happened. And there, you see little smokestacks here and there. I say smokestacks. It's actually mostly steam that comes out of them because of all the processes that for bitumen processing and all that, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so it's green everywhere. You don't really see a lot of waste laying around. Like, they have these big ponds called tailings ponds, and they're not – they were in the news as well, and they're not quite the tar pits that were advertised, but they're not very nice to be in either. You certainly wouldn't want to be in them. But I'll tell you, it's a town that you can tell that there was a lot of money there once, and now there's not so much. In the boom, this would have been back in about 2012, so 10 years ago or so, you would have people renting out bedrooms of their mobile homes for $2,500 a month, Canadian. That's, I don't know, what is that, about 1,600 American, roughly?
Yeah. Yep.
Just for one little bedroom in, like, a crappy, rundown little crap hole in the back end of nowhere. But they would get the money because everything was booming and everybody wanted to be in Fort Mac. That was the place to be from about, geez, probably 2000 to about 2014.
Yep.
That's where you wanted to be. And every young man who left high school early and went to work, that's where he went. And they laughed at their teachers because as soon as they dropped out, they were making twice what their teachers were making.
Yep.
Not that that helped them out now because obviously the economy is in the crapper. So that's one of the places I've traveled to that not a lot of folks get to go. And really, it features a couple strip clubs and a casino, and that's really about it. Other than that, it's just your usual, you know, middle of nowhere, blue collar town, salt of the earth kind of folk for the most part. Not the most exciting place to travel, and you certainly wouldn't want to book your holiday there, but I figured I'd give a little spiel on it since I didn't really have anywhere else besides Vulcan. We've talked about that to death. As far as places I'd like to go, probably if I had to pick just one place outside of Canada that I got to go and then I would never be allowed to travel again, it would have to be the UK. Most of my bloodline is from Scotland and Wales, at least the bloodline I can confirm anyway. So it'd be kind of cool to go and see kind of, you know, where I come from. And like Richard says, Scotland just looks gorgeous. I'd love to go and eat in a seaside bar. That would be super cool.
Yep.
Go have a beer in Ireland while I'm there. You might as well, right? Why not? And just tooling around London. Richard made it sound so much fun that I got to go. I got to go see what it's all about.
Excellent. Yeah, I just wanted to say what Richard was saying, like what when people talk about Paris and how it's dirty and whatever. I've heard that too. And then my mom went to Paris. What year did she go? 2013, I think. And she said it's not like that at all. Like, it's nice. Like, it's clean and everyone's friendly. So I don't.
There's that trope that, like, people say that, like, French people are super rude.
Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with, you know, like, tourists, you know, they don't even attempt to speak French. It's not a difficult language, and being Canadian, we were taught in school, like, some French, and, you know, I did some learning before I left, and I attempted to speak as much French as I could while I was there, and every single person that I ran into that I attempted to speak French with, super friendly, and even seeing them interact with people who couldn't really speak French, or at least tried, they were definitely, you know, super friendly with, and then they would speak the English that they could, and everything was great. And even if they didn't even try, they weren't even, like, I didn't even see a lot of, like, rude behavior. It was just, like, a little bit difficult trying to communicate, you know, cross language.
Yeah.
But that's just sort of like a trope that people say that French people are just jerks. They're not, you know, you give a little bit of effort and they'll give effort back just like anybody else.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, for myself, I've been to Mexico in 2004. I went to the Mayan Riviera for my honeymoon with my wife. And it was at an all-inclusive resort. Oh man, I loved it. Good food, lots to drink. One thing I found being in Mexico, because like last time I was in Mexico, I was 14, so now I'm 24, and I could not stay drunk. Just because, I don't know, it's the humidity, and you sweat out, like I was trying to, you know, like get a good buzz on, and then if you stop drinking, like you're sober within like a half an hour, or you feel sober. So, anyway, I found that, but yeah, it was a beautiful resort, it was a great time. The first day was really great, because, you know, my wife and I, you know, it's our honeymoon, it started out great. You know, all lovey-dovey by the pool and all that kind of stuff. But the thing with my wife is she got some really bad advice from some friends about how to get a tan. And she actually burnt herself. Like, she got a really, really bad sunburn after that first day. I had a great time because I refuse to sit in the sun for, you know, like the longest I can do is like an hour, and then I got to go find some shade. Like, I, you know, like that's just the way I am. Plus, I'm part native. I think that has something to do with it. Like, I don't burn as easy, whereas my wife is like a complete white girl. So she burnt really easy. So I felt really bad for her. Like, it definitely hampered her enjoyment of the honeymoon. Towards the end, she got better, but I mean, when she was leaving, like, I mean, her skin was peeling, and yeah, it was bad. It was not good for her. But I had a hell of a time. Like, I really did. We went to this, I don't know, they had this honeymoon ball for, because, like, the resort we went to was, like, a couples resort. So, you know, a lot of people go there to get married or for their honeymoon. So we went to this ball for honeymooners, and like I'd spent all day at the beach type of thing, right? Basically I lost track of time. It's like, oh shit, that, you know, like we had signed up for this ball to go to. So I didn't have time to shower or anything. I was the only one wearing a ball cap at this thing. Everyone else is like wearing like nice clothes and like, I mean, I was wearing nice clothes, but I had to wear a ball cap because my hair was like all sweaty and greasy. And I was the only one there wearing a ball cap, but no one said anything. I just, when I was looking around the room and no one else was wearing a hat, I'm like, ugh. I kind of stand out here. I went to Vegas in 2014. We went there for our 10-year anniversary. She didn't get sunburnt this time. We had a good time. But probably my favorite trip since, you know, being together with my wife, aside from Alaska, that was a fantastic cruise, was when we went to Disneyland in 2013. We took the kids there. And we went with my brother-in-law and his family and Crystal's grandma. She's the one that organized the whole thing, and her aunt. And we had such a great time. Like Disneyland and also the California Adventure Park is, like, right beside Disneyland. We had such a great time. Like, I we were all, like, little kids. You know, we were going on rides, having, like, I had way more fun than I did in 1994 for a couple of reasons. Like, one, in 1994, like, when I went with my parents, we only spent a day there. To really get, you know, the lay of the land for Disneyland and the California Adventure, which was being built when in 1994, so it wasn't even open yet. You gotta devote a, like, a week. Like, we were there for 5 days, and that still wasn't enough. But we went to both parks. I love the California Adventure Park, I think, a little bit more, because Disneyland is definitely more congested. Everything's, you know, like, they built it in a time when you didn't have large crowds, I guess. Whereas the California Adventure Park, it's more spread out. There's more space. And I love, like, I'm, like, my nephews, and my son, when he was younger, really liked the movie Cars. And at the California Adventure Park, they have Cars Land. And you go to this Cars Land, and you really feel like you're in that movie. Like they did such a good job replicating that, like, that little desert town. Like, you actually feel like you're in the desert. It was awesome. So yeah, that was, you know, one of the best trips we've ever done. I definitely want to go back to Disneyland. It was a lot of fun. So where do I want to go in the future? Well, like I said, my mom had some exchange students after I moved out of the house. So I have a Finnish exchange sister in Finland. Her name's Jessica. And she actually grew up next door neighbors to Jari Kurri, who used to play for the Edmonton Oilers. So that was really cool. I really want to go visit her, go to her parents' house so I can meet Jari Kurri too. I think that'd be fantastic. My brother-in-law is from Sweden. So, and his parents obviously come from Sweden, but they also have a summer house in Spain. So I would love to go visit them and then hit the summer house. My great grandpa came from England. My great grandma came from Scotland, like the Lockharts. So I've always wanted to go to England and Scotland because I do have relatives there, distant relatives that I'd like to meet and see. I've always wanted to go to New Zealand and Australia. I they're beautiful places. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan, so I'd love to see New Zealand. I'd love to see, you know, where they filmed some of those films.
Hobbit Town.
Yes.
A hotel called Hobbit Town, and you could live in, like, hobbit houses. I want to do that so bad.
That would be cool. And like Richard, I want to go to Antarctica. You know, like, there is that Antarctica cruise. I know it's not, like, in terms of space, Antarctica isn't really the bottom of the world, but to me, it always is the bottom of the world. So I've always wanted to go down there. You know, plus I'm a huge fan of Watchmen, so I've always wanted to, you know, go down there, like, what's his name? Ozymandias. That's where he built his little retreat. I'd love to go down to Antarctica. But the one thing I want to do for sure before I kick the bucket is there's this cruise that goes through the Panama Canal from Los Angeles. You start in Los Angeles, and then you go down to Panama, go through the Panama Canal, and then you come back up to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I would love to do it. It's like a two-week cruise, or maybe it's 3 week. I can't remember. But I would love to do that. I want to see the Panama Canal. I just, the whole engineering aspect of it just fascinates me. And yeah, I love cruises. They're fantastic. All right, Kevin, do you have another travel story for us? And where would you like to go in the future?
Okay, so I know I've told the story other places, but I'm going to take the Stanley approach here.
Mm-hmm.
If it's someone's first podcast.
Absolutely.
So back to that X from the earlier story. The solution after this cross-country trip was for me to join her in her graduate program and just live with her and work and everything in New Jersey. Where neither of us have been before.
Yep.
So then around Christmas time, she decides, hey, I'm going to go back and see my family, her family in California. I didn't know what I was doing, so I was just stuck there on my own for 3 weeks. Just, all right, I guess I'll work and not do anything else here. Out of nowhere, my dad, who lives in Maryland, called me up, said, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'm just kind of stuck here. You know, I'm working, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Do you want to go do New Year's in Times Square? Sure. So he drove up from Maryland, met me where I was staying in New Jersey, hopped on the train, subway, whatever system it was there, right into Manhattan. And it wasn't so much that trip as it was walking around experiencing the world pretty much all there in Times Square. The trick is go into one of the restaurants or bars along the way early. Spend too much money. Over tip. Then when you're standing out there all day or all night long and you just want a place to go to the bathroom, you can walk in, get yourself a drink, and they recognize you. Because otherwise, there were people next to us that had been there all day that were in diapers. Because what else were they going to do? There's no porta potties along that. There's nowhere to go. Nothing.
Huh.
So the other interesting thing for any trip like this is because all the TV stations and cable stations all have bands playing live.
Yeah.
It all has to be coordinated. You can't have a band on MTV playing live and a band on, you know, CBS playing live at the same time because their sound's going to cross over.
Yeah.
For people watching the TV. So it's all coordinated. But they also have to warm up. So we saw all these bands perform like 2-3 times and scheduled throughout it. So it was like a 3-hour concert just going on around us.
Wow.
Like everywhere in front of us. So, yeah. Rascal Flatts was playing, My Chemical Romance, probably some boy band at the time, the, you know, pop band I didn't really care for, but it was just being in the moment was fantastic. So they have, I forget the backstory, but, they have some veteran come up and, flip the lever, drop the ball, you know, everyone screams Happy New Year.
Mm-hmm.
You do the little song, do the count, you know. Everyone hugs and sings, and then New York City Police immediately forms a wall and says, time to go, and just pushes everyone out immediately. So, like, 12:01, get going.
Yeah.
Don't care where you go, but you can't stay here, because it's going to take so long to clear the streets. They want everyone gone right away.
Yep.
So we don't really have a plan. Start a journey. We head back to the station, and we're just waiting. It's going to be a good hour before the next one going to Jersey. We've been standing all night. We're just like sitting on the floor of this dirty station because we just hurt so bad. We're so tired. But so was everyone else, too. It was just a collective, you know, hangover pretty much for everyone. Get on the train, heading back, look over, starting to, my dad's a veteran as well, starting conversation with person X. Oh, you're a veteran. Isn't it the person that flipped the switch? Just happened to be going back to the same place we were.
Huh.
So we just sat there and talked with them the whole experience. How did you get chosen? What did you have to do? Who did you meet during this whole process? How many times did you have to go over it? Like, really stuff that you would not know otherwise.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, publicity of it, the TV, the dynamics of everything. Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Get back, you know, like, just still enjoying the experience of it all, having a blast, pass right out. And I didn't realize I could be in so much pain at the time from the leg cramps of going hours of standing amongst a few million people, probably, to then laying down. And I was punching and stabbing my legs with my fingers just to get them to uncramp.
Ouch.
Just anything I could do.
That sounds terrible, man.
It was. If I was intelligent, I would have, like, eaten a banana or something as soon as I got one. You know, something like that.
Okay, so I got a couple questions. I
mean, just a price to pay. That's a cool curtain to see behind that not everybody gets to see.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk to that guy.
Yeah, oh, it was a blast. I would do it again. I'd plan out things, you know, so well in advance.
A couple questions. Was this a Dick Clark? Was Dick Clark still alive when you went there?
No. He was still alive, but Ryan Seacrest was doing most of it.
Oh, okay. And second of all, did you or did you not use a diaper?
No.
No? Okay. No,
the bar restaurant thing we went to was like two floors. You know, very nice, beautiful building there.
So you managed to relieve yourself normally.
Yeah, we went in, we got food there, and then we were up at the bar, and it didn't help, or it didn't hurt any, that the bartender was blonde Russian wearing tight leather pants.
Hmm.
So we kind of stuck around for a bit anyways. But then, you know, when we had to go to the bathroom, there's a real easy one to duck in again. Oh, you guys are back. Yep. Yep, we're back to use the toilet and spend way too much on some drinks right now.
Well, there you go. Yeah, I've heard of people doing the diaper thing. I don't think I could ever bring myself to do that. Like if I have to go somewhere where, you know, I possibly have to wear a diaper, I'm really going to not go there, I think.
I agree.
Okay, now we all have a mission. We all have a collective mission. We need to find somewhere that Chris wants to go badly enough that he would willing to wear a diaper.
He'll wear a diaper.
There was one time, I think this was back in 2001, I went to an Eskimos game, and I went with some friends, and me and my one buddy were sitting in the back, and we were drinking the whole way, right, from Stony Plain to Commonwealth Stadium. And it was a Calgary Edmonton game, and it was like, you know, a lot of people there. I have never came so close to peeing my pants as I did that day waiting in line. I was like I was hyperventilating. I was like, I don't think I'm, you know, like, I really was like, what do I just whip it out and just take a piss on the sidewalk? Like, I don't really want to piss my pants. And yeah, it was close. It was so close. I think I would have just whipped it out and took a leak wherever, and then I probably would have been escorted out by security or arrested or both.
Well, where exactly were you at that point? Because if you were just like outside by the stadium, nobody would even noticed.
Well, we were
pretty common around there.
Yeah, we were standing on the steps going into Commonwealth, but the line was so packed. There were so many people. Like, honestly, if there hadn't been so many little kids running around, I probably would have just said, fuck it. But I really didn't want to do that in front of a kid. Like, I've never had to pee so bad.
Or splatter them, and now you got to explain yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I was literally hyperventilating until, you know, until I managed to make it to a washroom. But yeah, but the whole diaper thing, I can't do that. But all right, well, Ragnar, did I ask you already? Do you have another travel story? Okay, do you have another travel story, and where would you want to go in the future?
Okay, so in a normal year, pre-pandemic, and hopefully it'll be like this post-pandemic, my favorite trip that I do every year is in December, I go to Vancouver for a craft show. The craft show there is not one of my favorite shows. There's nothing wrong with it, except that it's super, super long. But it's always one of my favorite trips because my dad comes with me.
Nice. So
I drive. Yeah. Boys trip.
Yep.
So I drive from Saskatoon to Edmonton, and he lives in Edmonton, so I pick him up and then spend the night in Edmonton. And then the next day we drive to Kamloops. And we spend the night there. And we have like a whole routine because we've done this for several years. So in Kamloops, when we get there, we go to the legal marijuana store, the government-run one. Mm-hmm. And he swears that he can get a contact high just from sniffing all the samples. So he'll literally go – they have about 100 samples you can smell. And he'll just go and sniff every single one.
Yeah.
And then – after that, we go to the Bianca Amor Liquidation World place that is across the street and look at all the crazy, ridiculous, tacky knockoff crap. And then we go to Swiss Chalet. And Swiss Chalet is not that great a restaurant, but when you're a little bit stoned and you're hungry from being on the road, boy, it hits the spot. And then we go back to the hotel and watch Forged in Fire or whatever else is on television until we pass out. And then the next day is always the worst day of the trip because we have to do the Coca-Cola. Mm. And the Coca-Cola pass from just after Kamloops to basically Hope. I mean, they made a TV show out of it called Highway to Hell, and it is exactly like that. In the winter, it can be really freaking scary because you're going downhill down the side of a mountain for about 2 hours. It's a major trucking route. It gets crazy icy, and there's lots of parts where you don't have any choice. You might have to hit somebody. So that's always the worst part of the drive. And then as soon as you get to Hope is just if you've ever been there, it's just a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. It's where they shot the very first Rambo movie. And when you watch that movie, that is exactly what that area looks like. It's just stunning. And then from Hope to Vancouver, it's all sunshine and happiness, and it's green, and there's things growing, and it's just crazy. And then we get to Vancouver, and we do the setup for the craft show, and then we go out for supper. And there's a bajillion awesome places to eat in Vancouver. And then the rest of the show, we book a hotel that's across the street from the convention center, so we don't have to drive. And then the whole rest of the trip, we just take public transit everywhere because Vancouver's public transit is so good, you don't need a car. Unlike Saskatchewan or Alberta, where the public transit, I mean, yeah, it'll get you where you need to go, but man, it's brutal. It just takes forever. And it's always one of my favorite shows. The show itself is a long, hard show, but the trip with my dad is so much fun. And then we get into pranking each other. So the best prank that I pulled on him is he was in the bathroom of the hotel having a poop, and I pulled out a bunch of industrial strength like duct tape, and I taped every single item he had to the floor, but I did it so you couldn't see the tape.
Yeah.
So he go to pick up his book and it's stuck to the table. He go to pick up his shoes and they're stuck to the floor. And I did it to every single item. Oh, he was so mad. It was so funny. Just watching him like, oh, this is stuck too. Oh, this is stuck too. So his revenge story, he tried to get revenge the next trip. He went to, I don't know where, probably Spencer's, I don't know, some store, and he found fake bed bugs. They're these little plastic things that you can scatter all over the bed.
Nice. So
I come out of the bathroom, and he scattered them all over the bed. And I lie down, and I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this? Like, oh, gross, it's a bug. And he's getting all super freaked out. But I start laughing, and he doesn't understand why I'm laughing. And eventually when I stop laughing, I go to my suitcase, and I pull out the exact same package of bed bugs that I had bought to place on his bed.
No way.
So his revenge didn't quite work, but we sure had a good laugh about it. So that's a trip that I look forward to all year. And because of the pandemic, we didn't go last year, and it's kind of up in the air if that show will happen this year or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to think that shows will be back on. I want to think that maybe even summer I'll be back to work, but I don't know. It's not looking good the way it stands right now. So I'm ready. They can call me up and say we have a show next weekend, and man, I can make it happen. But I'm not holding my breath on that front right now.
Yeah. Yeah, fingers crossed. And,
yeah. I mean, Fan Expo Vancouver was supposed to be in June. They just canceled it this week and moved it to February. Calgary Expo is supposed to be in July, but I think it's going to be the same thing. It's going to get canceled.
Probably.
Edmonton Expo is the first one that is I actually think has a chance of running this year. It's in October. The federal government here has promised almost daily that everybody in Canada will be fully vaccinated by the end of September. If they do meet that goal, which maybe they do and maybe they don't, there should be no reason why they can't have that show.
Yep.
But there's a lot of stuff that has to happen before then. And I'm also not convinced, even if they do manage to pull off the show, that there'll be any celebrities at it. It might just be a market and panel show, which is fine.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. But the good news is, in the meantime, you can get all your drinking horns and beard products at RagnarTheTrick.com.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%.
Yep.
Get her done.
I got to tell you guys, I do love when I wake up in the morning and there's an order that's come in overnight while I was asleep.
Awesome.
It's a great feeling.
So where do you want to go, Ragnar?
If I could go anywhere
that you've never been.
Somewhere that I've never been. There's a lot of different places that I'd really like to go, but I'm going to actually pick something a little bit closer to home. I've never been to Newfoundland, and I'd really like to go out. Once I've been to Newfoundland, then I've been to, like, the majority of Canada. I've never been to the Northwest Territories or Nunavut, but I've been to the Yukon, so that's close, and I've never been to Labrador or Newfoundland. And other than that, then I've been to everywhere in Canada, like every province.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think Newfoundland would be incredible.
It's surprising you haven't gone. I figured for sure if anyone had, you would have.
Well, I had a show booked for Newfoundland, but of course it got canceled. And then I've been to Nova Scotia a few times for shows. But even from Nova Scotia, Newfoundland is still an awfully long ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think we figured it out. It was still like a 3 or 4 hour journey from where we were in Nova Scotia to get to Newfoundland. But I'd love to go there. I think Newfoundland is a part of Canada that is very regionally distinct from the rest of Canada.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Everyone I've ever met from Newfoundland has been a really cool and generally friendly person. And Newfoundland is the only part of Canada. Well, actually, that's not true, but Newfoundland is one of the parts of Canada that we have confirmed archaeological evidence that the Vikings were there.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
We actually do also have confirmed evidence that the Vikings went into what's Labrador to get lumber, but they didn't. There's no evidence to suggest they built the settlement or stayed there. It appears that they came from Greenland and Iceland specifically to harvest lumber and then went back. And there, we found lots of stuff that proves they were there, but there's no evidence that they settled there.
Yeah.
The Lance Meadow in Newfoundland is the only place in North America that there's archaeological evidence for the Vikings building a settlement.
Well, that's worth the trip right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's, to me, the trip right there. So it's very high on my bucket list. I don't think I'll be going there this year, but I'm looking for a trade show there for whenever things have reopened, mostly as an excuse to get out there. So hopefully someday. Probably not this year, though.
Excellent. I had a coworker that went there this was a few years back, and he said it's absolutely beautiful because his good buddy's from Newfoundland, so it was kind of cool. Like, he got to go back with his friend, and his friend showed him around and got to, you know, do all the sightseeing and stuff with him. So that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
But, all right, gentlemen. Well, thank you very much for sharing your travel stories. This was a lot of fun. But let's move on to our brain candy segment. And this is the segment where we discuss what anything that you've read, if you want, or seen, or whatever, listen to, and you can make it a pick or a pan, recommendation, or whatever you want. So I got a few quick ones here. Probably the best thing I've watched in the last 2 weeks was this documentary that's been on Netflix. It came out last year, and it's called The Last Dance, and it's the Michael Jordan documentary. It's a 10-part documentary, and I'm not the biggest basketball fan. I appreciate basketball. I never played it in school, you know, aside from gym class. I played 21, you know, at recess and stuff like that. But I mean, I of course I know who Michael Jordan was. I knew, I'd heard of Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, you know, all the big names and stuff. But I knew the Chicago Bulls, of course, were really big in the 90s. But this documentary was so awesome. It was one of those shows that I had to keep watching the next episode. It was, you know, like, it answered a lot of questions for me. I didn't really understand, like, when Michael Jordan first retired, and he went to play for the White Sox, like, what happened there? Like, why did he quit? I just assumed it was because he wasn't a good ball player, but he actually was a pretty decent ball player. I think if you're not the biggest basketball fan, like me, like, I'm not a basketball fan by any means. Like I said, I have an appreciation for basketball, but The Last Dance was really, really good documentary, really well done. At the time of this recording, I watched the first episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier. I really liked it, you know, especially that opening scene. Like, that was amazing. It was really cool. I'm really looking forward to see what's going to happen going forward. I don't want to say too much, but it's only been one episode so far. But I really enjoyed it. And at the time of this recording, last night, my wife and I watched a movie on Apple TV called Cherry. This is the Tom Holland film, where he plays a war veteran who goes through PTSD and drug addiction. This was directed by the Russo brothers, who directed Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War. It was pretty good. I liked it. My wife, her critique was that the trailer made it seem like a better movie. But I thought it was pretty good. I thought Tom Holland did an excellent job portraying, you know, someone going through PTSD, and the drug addiction aspect of it. I think this movie really rings true to a lot of people, you know, a lot of these veterans that, you know, don't get the help or can't, or for whatever reason can't get the help, and then they self-medicate, and how quickly that can spiral out of control. So I recommend it. I think it was a fine movie. I think Tom Holland did an excellent job. I don't remember the name of the actress who plays his wife, but she was also very good. All right. Kevin, do you have anything for Brain Candy?
So I have a stack here of about 30 mass market paperbacks of old comic strips. I'll be going through on my own. But at work at the library, all of a sudden one or two came in one day from another library. Mm-hmm. And then a couple more next day, and a couple more next. I thought, these are in our system? You gotta be kidding me. So I started looking up. We have all these Hagar the Horrible, Wizard of Id, BC, Heathcliff, mm-hmm. and even more, like old, you know, grocery store paperback collections.
Yeah.
So it's all like 60s, 70s. I'm sure some of these came out in the 80s too. I had no idea that these even existed. I'm curious what's in it. Some of them are probably going to be horrible. Some of them I look forward to seeing what the strips used to be, because I know a lot of these, the old comic strips have been going on for decades, had moments where they were amazing and, you know, really groundbreaking, really intelligent, really funny, and then just got phoned in.
Yeah.
Over time. So I think I've reached the max of books I can check out as I'm going through these. But awesome. I just found a ton. So I've been waiting for them to come in from, like, all the libraries within three counties of us. And I think I have them all so far, but I am not totally sure. Then I found out that they also have the Fantagraphics Complete Peanuts as well, which each volume is 1 year of the comic strip. So there are a lot of them. But Peanuts is a big one that, as a kid, I'm like, I don't understand. You know, it's Peanuts, it's cute, but the heck are they talking about? Now as an adult, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to it. Also, if any of you guys or anyone listening, if your paper has it, the current Heathcliff comic strip is absolutely absurd. They just went off the deep end.
Hmm.
Like, it's Adult Swim level humor now.
Cool.
It's really obscure, odd jokes, and still a single panel comic strip.
Huh. Cool. I don't even remember the last time I looked at or picked up a paper, let alone look at the, you know, the comic strips. I read our local paper, but there's no comics in it. But yeah, that's cool. I envy you for Hagar the Horrible. I love Hagar. He was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, he was always pretty sweet.
And then some of these look like they had animated specials at some point too.
Hmm.
Like Beetle Bailey is another one that I have a ton of here. There was a Beetle Bailey cartoon for many episodes, but then there's like random BC holiday specials, you know, that don't come up anymore with, you know, the Heath or with Garfield and Charlie Brown Christmas. Nope. Wizard of Id, it looks like there's one, and Hagar, I can't tell yet. It looks like it was so far. It looks like it was made, but never released. So I've been digging up all sorts of fun stuff like that.
Interesting. Awesome. Ragnar, do you have anything for Brain Candy?
Yeah. like probably much of the world, I watched The Falcon and the Winter Soldier on Friday, and I'm excited for tomorrow when there's a new episode. Yep. However, I really didn't like that opening sequence. The action... Falcon seemed so callous and bored by all the action as it was happening, which I think was the point for him and his character, and that's where they're going to take it. But watching that level of action happen, I was just like, this gets, like, sometimes superhero movies get a little too overdone with the action,
and
it feels like there's no threat to the hero, and if there's no threat to the hero, I find the action really boring. That was one of my biggest complaints about the second Avengers film, was just that, like, it just didn't really feel to me like the heroes had any chance of losing.
Yeah.
And I felt like that in that opening sequence, where it's just like, oh, yeah, no one's going to actually hit him. He's not going to die. He's not at any kind of risk. But after, once I got past that part, I thought the rest of the episode was interesting, and I think it's going to go in some interesting places, and I'm excited to watch it, and I'm really happy that there's finally new stuff coming out to watch. You know, we've got, you know, WandaVision, which I'm still not sure how I feel about it, but it was there, and it was something to watch every week. And now we have Falcon, and then when Falcon ends, I believe Loki's up next. And so it's nice having something to look forward to every week for the next while. There'll be something to watch.
Yep.
So that's the thing I've been watching the most, or most recently, of note. Otherwise, I'm casually watching Star Trek Enterprise in advance of our upcoming podcast.
Excellent.
And I just found at a thrift store season 2, 3, and 4 of Babylon 5, and I believe I already have season 1. So I nice. think I have nice. A good chunk of that to watch now.
Sick.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah, that was a good find.
Yeah, it was. The not to give too much away, but like, yeah, Falcon and Winter Soldier. The one thing with that opening fight that where I was like, does he really need Cap shield? Is like, because he uses his wings as a shield, which is cool.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. He's got these wings that are doing a perfectly good job of shielding. What the heck does he need the shield for?
Yeah, he doesn't really need the shield. I think Bucky's going to end up with it. That's what I think. That's my prediction. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Richard, do you have anything for Brain Candy, sir?
Yes, actually, I finished Enterprise because I love Enterprise, so I ripped through it. But I've started watching an old show called Farscape. Nice. I don't know how many of you have seen it, but it's an interesting take on more or less like contemporary, like our times of sci-fi and and how, you know, a NASA scientist, I guess, gets shot across the universe, and now he has to adapt to living across the universe with, you know, hundreds of species he's never seen. He's never even seen an alien, let alone hundreds of them. And I think that at some point in the future, a couple episodes, maybe we could talk about it and maybe go through a few of the episodes, because it's actually a really interesting show. It's kind of campy. It's you know, only 4 seasons plus the Peacekeeper Wars, so I think that'd be cool to talk about at some point in the future.
Is it what though? Camp has been really missing from pop culture lately. I gotta say.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that.
Is Farscape available, like, in Canada on any streaming service?
Yeah, I'm currently watching it on Prime Video.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's on Prime?
Really?
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, buddy.
Because I used to watch it on the Sci-Fi Network back when we had one of those old satellite dishes that had to move to find the satellite.
Yeah.
Also, I've been watching Red Dwarf, which is a...
Red Dwarf is great.
Love Red Dwarf. They have like 13 or 14 seasons now. I think it's over. And for anybody else who likes watching BBC comedy, I rewatched the entirety of Blackadder as well.
Nice. Oh, yeah. I have the whole thing on disc. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a new one that I didn't even know existed called Blackadder Back and Forth. It was like a final episode. It was sort of like a special one-off they did for like the opening of some big theater, and it was pretty fun. It was just
cool.
Enjoyable to see them all back again.
That's really awesome. Well, in the future on the Trek 1701 podcast, what they used to do on the Atomic Geeks podcast, they used to do a topic called Gunpoint Reviews. We could do something like that where someone picks something for us to watch and then we review it. So Richard, you could pick like a Farscape episode that you think's really good, and then we could all like watch it and then give our thoughts on it. Something like that.
Yeah, I'd recommend watching at least the first episode and then something else, because you got to get sort of the whole premise for the show, and it's kind of laid out in the first episode or two.
Excellent. Well, we will definitely do that in an upcoming episode for sure, because I've never checked it out, but I've always been interested in it.
Yeah, definitely watch the first like few episodes just to get a feel for it. And then you can decide, like, do I want to watch a campy show? I like campy shows. We need more campy shows. And just, like, just see how you feel about it. Just remember that there's some similarities. Like, I'm a big fan of characters like Teal'c and Worf, mm-hmm. strong, like, warrior types. This show has that. It has a character called Ka Dargo, and he's from Race of Warriors. And, yeah, that's just really
He's
cool.
the guy with the big red beard, isn't he?
He is. He's also the guy with the big-ass sword that turns into a pulse rifle.
I like him already.
The Qualta Blade, as it were.
Excellent. Curtis, do you have anything for Brain Candy, sir?
I do. So last week, I wrapped up my most recent rewatch of Lost, my favorite show of all time.
Nice.
And, you know, I've seen it through 7 times now. And I always pick up on more every single time. I thought I had it all figured out, and then I pick up on more. So it's great that way. It just keeps on giving. But since then, I've actually done a little bit of time traveling myself. Just yesterday, it's funny you mentioned National Lampoon's Vacation earlier in the conversation, because mm-hmm. I just watched that yesterday.
Nice.
And it was just Chevy Chase just as hilarious now as he was in the 80s. I don't care what anybody says. The day before that, I watched The Goonies, one of my nice. All-time favorite movies from childhood.
Such a good movie. Yep.
And the day before yesterday, one of my like top 5 favorite movies of all time, for sure. I could watch it once a week and never get bored. Starship Troopers.
Oh, the best.
Right?
Mm-hmm. All the various,
you love it or hate it.
All the various sequels are terrible. Don't watch them. But
I've never seen them, and now I never will. But that original...
Oh,
buddy.
10 out of 10, man.
The earliest I ever saw boobs was in the
Oh, so good.
It was fantastic.
And I was always like, why doesn't he just pick the hot one? Oh. and then as I got older, I'm like, oh, I guess they're both hot. But.
when that movie came out, I don't think I'd watched it yet, but my buddy Tyler had watched it. And his big takeaway from Starship Troopers was the co-ed showers.
Oh, yeah.
He thought they were fantastic. And this a few years ago, this other guy I work with, who's also named Tyler, put in a safety suggestion for co-ed showers at our work. I don't know what co-ed showers have to do with safety, but...
there's safety showers in case somebody gets something spilled on them.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, those are definitely could be co-ed.
But those are already co-ed.
Yeah. But just the regular showers, because at my work we have showers, because we have to shower when we leave work. You don't have to, but you should. And there's, of course, men's and women's, and for some reason he wanted co-ed.
Well, maybe it's so no one has to shower alone.
Yeah,
maybe. In case something.
Yeah, maybe he was lonely.
Shower's a dangerous place, man.
It could be. It could be. You could slip, hit your head.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's move on to our Enders segment. So this is the segment where we share geek news, any geek news that we have out there that's worth mentioning. So I'll kick it off. At the time of this recording, we're recording this episode on March 25th. Today is Robert O'Reilly's birthday. And for people who don't know, he was Gowron on Star Trek Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. And a super nice human being. We all got to meet him in Vulcan one year. I know I did, and Richard and Curtis did. I'm not sure about Ragnar, if you met him or not.
I did not get to meet him. He's one of the big people I'm missing from my DS9 collection.
Yeah, he's super nice guy. Really nice guy. And his eyes can really do those things. Like, they can really bug out. So at the time of this recording, it is his birthday. So happy birthday, Robert O'Reilly. And then the other thing I have is, once again, the movie Black Widow is pushed back. It was supposed to come out May of 2020. So it was supposed to come out almost a year ago. Then they moved it to May 2021. And now it's been pushed back to July 9th, 2021. And this is going to be apparently one of those Disney Plus releases plus theater release, because I guess they're banking on probably certain states or certain countries won't have their theaters open by this time. So if you can't, you can at least watch it on Disney Plus. I just want to watch this movie already. I mean, I've been excited for this movie for over a year now. I just want them to release it already. And the movie I'm really excited about has also been pushed back, because in July, Shang-Chi, the Master of Kung Fu, was supposed to be released. This is also a Marvel movie. It was supposed to be released in July. It is now pushed back, I believe, to September. And that's the one I really want to watch. I don't know if any of you guys watch Kim's Convenience. It's a show on CBC.
Yeah. I'm just gonna say it stars the guy from one of the guys from Kim's Convenience.
He's a Canadian guy. So I'm really excited for him for this show. And plus, the rumor is we're going to finally see the real Mandarin in the MCU. Because, of course, we saw the Mandarin in Iron Man 3, but it was just an actor. It was just Ben Kingsley playing a guy playing the Mandarin. And it was done for laughs. It was done, you know, ha-ha. But I was disappointed that, you know, they did that to the Mandarin. But then they did this short, I think it was released with Thor: The Dark World. It was like this 10-minute short that came with the Blu-ray, where basically the real Mandarin is alluded to, and he's, you know, put a hit out on the Ben Kingsley character. So I'm looking forward to seeing the Mandarin. I can't wait. So anyone else have anything else they want to throw out there for news items?
I got a little something, sad okay. news. Jessica Walters passed away. She was the voice of Mallory Archer in the show of Archer.
She was also in... basically played the same character in Arrested Development.
Yeah. So, that's sad. You know, RIP Jessica Walters. You know, she'll be missed. There was a lot of good roles that she did. And I know her best from Archer, but there's many others.
Some of the best Archer lines are from Mallory, though.
Yeah, that's her.
I just saw when everyone's talking about her death that she, which I didn't realize, she was the voice of the mom dinosaur on the Jim Henson sitcom Dinosaurs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
That's sweet.
Awesome. Fast.
Wow. Does anyone else have any news items for Enders?
Marvel's leaving Diamond.
Really?
They announced today. Yep.
Huh.
All Marvel comics and graphic novels starting in October will now be distributed by Penguin Random House.
Yeah.
And DC's still not with Diamond either.
Yep. But Marvel said, hey, Diamond, you can still ship our products if you want, but you pay the same rate anyone else would.
Yeah.
Or if anyone wants to get it directly from Penguin Random House, our shipping is free.
Huh.
Every comic store is going to go that way.
Yeah.
Just the shipping savings alone.
Yeah. Hmm. Plus, Diamond's been struggling for the last few years, from my understanding, like with shipping delays you know, not shipping the right products and so on and so forth. So, but, you know, they had the monopoly for how many years? So I guess they figured, you know, what else are you going to do? Well, now these companies are going somewhere else. That's good. It's awesome. Anyone else have anything for Enders? All right. We'll call this an episode. I went a little long, but that's fine because there's five of us here, and we had some really good stories, and I think it was a good episode. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Curtis, where can I find you? If I wanted to find you on the internet, where would I go?
At the moment, once again, nowhere. I had a social media presence on non-mainline sites for a while, but it drives me crazy, man.
Well, I know you're...
If anyone really wants to reach out, I'll find something. But yeah, for now, life is so peaceful without social media.
Bro. I hear you. And that's a theme I'm hearing more and more often from people. I have a couple of friends, a married couple, and I noticed I wasn't Facebook friends with them anymore. And I was a little concerned. I was like, did I say something or do something to piss them off? No, they just got rid of their social medias. They said they needed a break. So I was like, oh, cool. Good on them.
It's so relaxing, I gotta tell you.
I hear you. I hear it. I know, like, for myself, I went through a thing where I left a bunch of groups on Facebook because people's angry posts were making me angry. So there's very few groups I'm a part of on Facebook. But one group that you, the listener, could join is the Pop Culture Pub Podcast group. It's available on Facebook, and it's very positive. You know, we don't really have a lot of negativity there. I try and post a lot of fun pop culture stuff. So if you want to check that out, that's Pop Culture Pub and Podcast. And I'm going to probably maybe rename it to Podcast Network. I'm not sure. It's still a work in progress. And you can check out my blogs at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Richard, where could we find you, sir?
I have a very small presence in social media, much like Curtis. It's very not healthy, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like to, you know, keep an eye on things if I'm really, really bored. I don't even have any notifications turned on. I just click on it once in a while. But I have Gab, Monctorious, and Parler. Less so, but also Monctorious. Yeah. But in general, social media is not super great. So I try to stay away from it as much as I can.
I've also disabled most of my notifications, and I keep my phone on silent. So it'll vibrate. I keep it the vibrate on. So, like, if usually it's only my mom that calls me or my wife. It's so relieving. It really is. Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, you can find my blog over at masslibrary.com, and at masslibrary is across most social medias. And if you like my voice, you can also hear me over on The House Show, which is a retro wrestling podcast hosted over by the Retro Network.
Excellent. And last but not least, Ragnar, where can we find you, good sir?
Well, my main website, RagnarTheTrader.com. I'm also on Etsy under the same name, Ragnar the Trader. Our Facebook and Instagram, at Ragnar the Trader.
Excellent. All right, well, this was a little bit of an extra long episode, but like I said, I think it was well worth it. This is the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I was your host this week. My name's Chris Lockhart. And this was our travel stories episode. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.